From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. All this week we've been hearing what it's like being physically disabled in Iowa. Our reports from Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard have highlighted many facets from the lives of people who are blind, deaf, and who have trouble with mobility. Today we wrap up the series with several different perspectives on the topic, including that of a blind 22-year-old college student and a disabled man from Ankeny who recently grabbed headlines for climbing to the top of Chicago's tallest building. Are you physically disabled? You can join our conversation this hour with your perspective. First, the hour's news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's estimated that 96,000 Iowans between the ages of 16 and 64 have some type of physical disability. All this week, we've been hearing what it's like being physically disabled in Iowa. Our reports from Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard have highlighted many of the facets from the lives of people who are blind, deaf, or who have trouble with mobility. This hour, we want to wrap up the series with conversations that offer some more perspectives on being disabled in Iowa, and we want to hear from you this hour. Are you physically disabled somehow? Tell us about your experience and the unique challenges that you face. Perhaps you have some misconceptions you'd like to share about your disability that you'd like to clear up on the air, perhaps help some other people in thinking about disabled people in Iowa. 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org, our email. Give us a tweet at Iowa IP, or check out our page. Rob Dillard is joining me now from Iowa Public Radio Studios in Des Moines for the first part of this program. You are the reporter. This is your series, Being in Iowa. Rob, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Ben. This is the fifth in the series Being in Iowa I've produced, and I have to say the response to this has been incredible. I've received a flurry of emails, people who were touched in some way by the series, a lot of people asking if they can link to our series of stories via their websites. And so the response has been really positive.
That's tremendous, Rob. It's been a tremendous series. I have learned a lot. I'm no doubt you have learned a lot as a reporter, as you do every time we talk about the Being in Iowa series. Let's listen to a little bit of audio from a report that aired earlier this week when you went on a little tour with Phoebe Bubendorfer. She is in her 70s and in a wheelchair. Let's listen in for an excerpt from this piece of yours earlier this week.
These old buildings, they're beautiful, but they're so hard to get into for me.
Phoebe Bubendorfer rolls her wheelchair toward the main entrance of the Polk County Courthouse.
There might be a sign on the door that tells us where to go.
She powers the manual chair closer to the entryway using her well-conditioned arms.
I don't see any sign that tells where a person in a wheelchair could get in.
She's faced with 8 tall steps and no ramp, so she sets out to find a door she can enter.
Oh, look it. Here's a sign. Handicapped access located on the west side of the courthouse. Is this the west side?
The location of the sign puzzles her.
Why would you need it here if you're already on the west side? You need it out in front, right?
That's an excerpt from Rob Dillard's report in the series Being Physically Disabled in Iowa that aired all this week. We're wrapping up that with a conversation. Rob joining us for the first few minutes. So there's that old saying, Rob, you have to walk in someone's shoes to understand them. Here you have to sit in someone's wheelchair, so to speak, to understand. And that's a really enlightening experience to be able to go around town and find out what are obstacles for people in wheelchairs. Did you find any place that was better designed than the one you visited just there in that excerpt?
We did. I asked Phoebe first to take me to a building, an older building. The courthouse was built in 1906 and meets the requirements of the Americans with Disabilities Act simply by making some reasonable, affordable changes to the building because it was built before the ADA went into effect. I then asked her to take me to a building in Des Moines that she thought had done a nice job of design for people in wheelchairs. So we went to a recently renovated library in Des Moines, the Franklin Avenue Library. And it's one of her favorite spots. She spends a lot of time there. And she rolled around and showed me how they had lowered all the book return slots, how they'd lowered the counters for checking out books, how they'd lowered some of the computer screens so she could access the library's catalog. And she was very pleased with what changes had been made at the Franklin Library.
You know, so often when I've interviewed people who are disabled in one way or another, one of the biggest obstacles they find is misconceptions that people have about them. Was that also a theme in your reporting, your research, your interviews here?
Well, I tried to approach the series with respect, and I wanted to put this information out in the words of those people I was with, and that example you just played with Phoebe was what I was trying to accomplish. I let her do the talking and jumped in only when I needed to set a scene or to add some context to what she was saying. And I tried to accomplish that in each of the segments this week. So I'm very satisfied with how they were able to tell their own stories, and I tried to stay out of their way.
Okay, Rob Dillard, thank you very much. We are looking forward to the next installment in this fascinating series, the Being in Iowa series, coming up. Incidentally, you can hear all of these online. If you didn't hear all of them this week, Rob's wonderful reporting at iowapublicradio.org. I understand your series coming up in January, focusing on being gay and lesbian in Iowa. We'll look forward to that, Rob. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Ben.
Rob Dillard of Iowa Public Radio, talking about being physically disabled in Iowa. If you have a question, a comment, perhaps you are physically disabled and you'd like to tell us about your experience, the unique challenges that you face. Joining us now, Karen Kenninger, Director of the Iowa Department for the Blind. And she joins us by phone. Karen, welcome to our program.
Here.
Karen, yes, now we hear you. Are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Welcome to our program. Thank you for joining us.
It is my pleasure.
Also joining us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines, Brant Larson. He is 22 years old, taking a short break, but actually a senior at the University of Iowa, right? Brant, welcome to our program.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Karen, let me start with you, Director of the Iowa Department for the Blind. What is the mission of your department?
The mission of our department is to help people become independent and self-sufficient people so that they can get jobs and live the way that they want to live.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the ways that your department accomplishes that?
We have an adult orientation and adjustment center where people come to stay and learn all the alternative techniques of blindness and to develop their self-confidence. We also have a vocational rehabilitation program for people seeking employment, an independent living program for the more and more seniors who are losing vision as older adults but who want to stay active in their homes and communities. And we have a library for the blind and physically handicapped.
I understand, Karen, that you yourself are blind, right?
Yes, I am.
Tell us a little bit about your blindness. Are you blind from? Have you been blind from birth?
Basically, yes, I have. I was born with a degenerative retinal disease called retinitis pigmentosa, which they discovered when I was 16 months old, so I've been dealing with it ever since.
Now, your department offers mobility training and orientation courses. What is taught in them?
The mobility training, primarily we use the long white cane, and we teach people how to get around Des Moines and or their own hometowns using the long white cane, teaching them how to travel safely, cross streets safely, use public transportation, and just basically, you know, go up and down stairs, go in and out of stores, buy things, just the kinds of things that you need to be able to do to just, you know, lead a normal life.
Brant Larson, you are blind, I understand, and currently taking an orientation and mobility course at the Iowa Department for the Blind in Des Moines. Tell us, what are you discovering in this course that is improving your life?
The main thing which I've discovered from the course is just various ways to get around without using any sight.
Mm-hmm. Have you recently become blind?
I've had some usable vision, very little, my entire life. But I had a chance this summer, fall, and then into the winter to take a break from my studies and then come to the orientation center to learn some different techniques for mm-hmm. how to deal with blindness.
And so when you return to the University of Iowa to continue your studies, do you think you will be better equipped because of this training to pursue your studies?
Absolutely.
In what way?
The main thing I've gained from the orientation center is more of an intangible thing. It's an increase in confidence just in my abilities to accomplish any sort of task. Mm-hmm. Basically, the idea is that you gain different techniques to get various projects and tasks done, and that kind of translates into getting confidence in being able to face any sort of issue that you may face in the future.
Mm-hmm. Brandt, both you and Karen, run off the bat here, have used that word confidence, self-confidence. Give us an idea of why people who lack sight impaired or blind would lack confidence. What is it about that experience that does that to you?
Often I think that it starts from a lack of knowing the right people who can show you to get certain things accomplished. So I grew up with the idea that there were certain limitations that I wouldn't be able to overcome. Mm-hmm. But simply by meeting people who had already solved issues that I may have been dealing with, I'm able to realize that there are many alternative techniques than just the norm.
Mm-hmm. And it was a surprise, perhaps, to meet that first blind person who was tremendously self-confident.
Less of a surprise and more, it was a delight, and it showed me that things were possible.
Mm-hmm. Karen Kenninger, that's interesting that self-confidence is a key factor, even though it has nothing whatsoever to do with sight.
Yes, it certainly is, and I believe that the reasons are, as Brandt said, people impose their own beliefs on everybody around them, including blind people, and blind people have absorbed these beliefs themselves. And those beliefs in our society are that if you can't see, you can't do, and therefore, if you're blind, we can't really expect you to do very much, and therefore, you can't really expect yourself to do very much, and that becomes it results in a lack of confidence. You don't, oftentimes people give up trying because people around them don't really even allow people to try to do things because they're afraid they're going to get hurt.
We're talking about being physically disabled in Iowa this hour. Karen Kenninger with us, also Brandt Larson. Karen is director of the Iowa Department for the Blind. Do you happen to know, Karen, as we talk about all disabilities, not just blindness, how many blind people are there in Iowa, and how many is that in the total number of disabled people in Iowa?
We estimate that there are about 69,000 people in Iowa who have significant vision loss, and about 10,000 of those people are legally to totally blind.
Okay. Let's go to our phones. If you have a disability, you'd like to tell us about your experience, the challenges that you face, the insights you may be able to share with us, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Jesse is with us from Creston. Good afternoon, Jesse. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Thanks for taking my call, I should say.
Yeah. Are you disabled, Jesse?
I am. I'm legally blind. I have been my entire life as a result of hydrocephalus, and actually received services through the Department for the Blind up until just here a couple of years ago, and still utilize the library services.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. You wanted to ask a question or just share something that's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to share that misconceptions about vision loss and disability in general seem to be getting worse in some senses in our culture. As a person with a disability tries to go about their daily life, it seems that people that are not disabled do not want to allow that disabled individual to do things for themselves. And when they do go to help someone with a disability, they make other misconceptions. For example, you know, I, as a legally blind person, might ask someone for help, but I've had people that maybe talk a little louder because they don't think I can hear them, or talk on a different level because they think that intellectually I'm not up to par.
That is difficult. Being a sighted person, a lot of sighted people are put in the position of not knowing if you should help, and then if and then how a person should help. Karen, what advice can you give to sighted people when they do want to help, when and when not to, and how to?
Well, the simplest thing is, if you think somebody wants some help, ask them, can I help you? For instance, if you're going across the street, do you need help? And if I say no, thank you very much, then you just accept that and go on. If I say yes, then you need to say, how can I help you? What would you like me to do? And maybe I want to take your arm because of whatever reason, there's construction or something.
Okay, so take the direction. But simply asking the question, may I help, is not a slight.
No, not at all.
Okay. Jesse, thank you very much. You've been blind for a number of years. Have you noticed that there's been an improvement in the way that society treats your disability?
Well, it really depends on where you're geographically located. I think in the bigger cities, it's getting better. In the smaller towns, there's still maybe some question. I noticed a huge shift in the Creston area a couple of years ago. I had come back from Rochester, Michigan with a dog guide and did a series of presentations in Creston and a couple other communities. And for me and from some other disabled individuals I've talked to, the responses that they've gotten have been more positive, because the children that saw these presentations learned and passed that knowledge on to parents, siblings, friends, and that sort of thing.
Interesting. Jesse from Creston, thank you for sharing your experience.
Thank you.
And we want to include, before we come up to this break, along with Karen and Brandt, Gene Prickett is joining us, superintendent for the Iowa School for the Deaf in Council Bluffs, as we discuss being physically disabled in Iowa. Gene Prickett, welcome to our program.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be with you.
Tell us a little bit about your school, the basics of it. How many people, deaf people are there? What ages are they? And what's going on there?
Our current on-campus enrollment is 101 students. The ages are toddler, clear up, through age 21. We have a boarding unit, a dormitory, for students who live too far to commute, although the smallest students are local students, and they go home every day and don't stay necessarily on the campus, especially the preschoolers.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission is to prepare these students, just as every other Iowa school does, for life after graduation as literate students, literate citizens who are contributing to society, and we serve as a statewide resource.
Now, I understand, Gene, that you used to work with the blind. Now you work with the deaf. How is instruction different for students who, in the school who are deaf or hard of hearing when we relate that to people with sight impairment?
Yes, my career started out as a teacher of students with visual impairments, and then I transferred into education of students who are deaf or hard of hearing. The difference literally is the communication mode. For visually impaired students, students who are blind or have low vision, those students can participate in a regular class very readily as long as they have the proper instruction in the use of the materials and receive those expanded core curriculum classes, such as how to use the long white cane, orientation and mobility, and the things that Director Kenninger and Brent have been discussing, those kinds of skills. For a student who is deaf or hard of hearing, often every concept has to be taught from discrete units. For example, if we want to talk to a deaf child about an apple, a very young deaf child who does not have deaf parents, and by the way, 95% of the parents of deaf children are themselves hearing and don't necessarily communicate with the children in the modes that are the most efficient for the children, the children's preferred learning modes. We take the apple, and we show the apple, and we cut the apple apart, and we eat the apple, and we use the written word for the apple, maybe a photograph of the apple. At ISD, we'll make the sign for apple because we use American Sign Language for our students for a teaching mode. And then we'll do other things with the apple, like make applesauce or drink apple juice to make a comparison.
Do you get the feeling that learning as someone who is blind versus someone who is deaf, is one harder than the other, or are they just different approaches you have to take to learning?
They're different, and I think that difference is in how much you can access in a regular classroom and how much language you develop prior to getting to school. In some ways, it is more difficult for a deaf child to learn language, in fact, in most ways, because that language processing in the brain is different than for any hearing person, including a hearing person who has a visual impairment.
We talked about misconceptions, stereotypes of sight-impaired people. Are there those misconceptions, common ones, for deaf people as well?
There are very common misconceptions. One is that every deaf child can use a cochlear implant and become a hearing child or an assistive listening device like a hearing aid. There are misconceptions that, well, if they don't have a properly licensed interpreter in the classroom, they could read, so we'll let them use the computer-assisted real-time captioning in the classroom. And for a child who doesn't have a sufficient language base yet because he or she couldn't hear it, to imitate it, to use it, to learn from parents and siblings and others around, that child doesn't have enough vocabulary to read. So that's a really large misconception that can hinder our efforts to provide those educational opportunities.
Okay, let's go quickly to our phones before we have to take a break. Joe is in Iowa City. Joe, thank you for joining our program. Are you disabled?
Yeah, I was born with cataracts, and so I have partial vision from that. I have vision that's above legal blindness, but not much, and so I don't drive. And a few things that I really have noticed over the years, I'm 60, and first of all, I still can bike.
Mm-hmm.
And people always ask, well, did you ride your bike today? You know, and that's the, and people who've known me for years will ask me this question, and it's not going to change. It's a birth defect. Mm-hmm. The other thing I've really noticed with people is that they sometimes, because they know there's something wrong with the eye, they won't look at me directly. And that's another thing is I was born, well, because I was born with this, the first 16 years I wore very thick convex lenses.
Right.
And unfortunately, my lens contacts, I'm having, over the last year, I've noticed a problem in the right eye, and we're trying to save the ability to wear contacts. But I may have to go back to wearing thick glasses again. And that's a prison I don't want to go back to.
Joe, we have to take a break. Thank you.
But anyway, that's the story. That's mine. Well, at least part of it.
Okay, Joe, thank you for sharing your experience. We have to take a break. Thank you to Joe in Iowa City for calling in. We're talking about being physically disabled in Iowa all this hour to wrap up Rob Dillard's series all this week on Iowa Public Radio. And we want to hear from you. Are you physically disabled? Tell us about your experience, the unique challenges you face, perhaps, as that last caller, things that annoy you, that those of us without disabilities can do better. 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Give us a tweet at IPR Talk. When we come back, Mark Block will join us. He suffered a spinal cord injury about 25 years ago, left him paralyzed from the neck down. Perhaps you saw he recently grabbed headlines for climbing to the top of the Willis Tower, the former Sears Tower in Chicago. He'll be with us when we come back. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News.
Being in Iowa is funded in part by Bankers Trust and the Principal Financial Group Foundation.
Back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer, and today we're talking about being physically disabled in Iowa. It's estimated that 96,000 Iowans between the ages of 16 and 64 have some type of physical disability. Now, this can mean different things, blindness, sight impairment, also deafness, and perhaps trouble with mobility all fall under this category of being disabled. We're talking about it because of our reports from Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard have highlighted many facets throughout the week in the Being in Iowa series this week. And we're reaching out to you this hour. Are you physically disabled? Tell us about your experience. Give us an insight about the challenges you face and how things perhaps have changed over the years in our society and how your disability is viewed. 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk. We're also on Facebook. Joining us, Karen Kenninger, Director of the Iowa Department of the Blind, Brant Larson, a college student who is blind, who is currently taking an orientation and mobility course at the Iowa Department of Blind for the Blind in Des Moines. Gene Prickett is with us, superintendent for the Iowa School for the Deaf in Council Bluffs. And before we go on to our next guest, Gene and Karen and Brant, I want to ask you about technology that was mentioned in our first half hour. But how has technology improved to help, first of all, people who are blind or sight impaired, Karen?
Technology, specifically the computer and all the related devices, have really opened up the ability for a blind person to read and to gather information off the web and through electronic documents. It's also opened some jobs to people who might not have been able to get certain types of jobs. The flip side of that is that a lot of the big companies that have their proprietary software do not develop it in a way that is accessible to a blind person with the screen reading technology that's available. Mm-hmm. So those jobs which might once have been available are now kind of out of reach because of the technology. So it's a double-edged sword.
Can you give us an example of a job that has been opened up to a blind person because of technology?
Jobs that require a lot of reading and a lot of writing, for instance, specifically.
I'll put you on the spot. That's okay.
Yeah.
Brant Larson, what kind of technology do you use that helps you get by?
Well, in a sense, sometimes the simpler the technology works to serve a similar purpose. For example, in the orientation center, there's a section of the classes where you do woodworking. And without having sight, you'd think it would be difficult. Obviously, it's impossible to use a tape measure to read it. So what they have is a metal rod with a nut that you turn, and each turn is a 16th, and each half inch is marked off by a raised line. So certain technologies can be made accessible in very simple and just creative ways.
Interesting. Gene Prickett, what about for people who are deaf? How has technology come into play there recently?
Well, actually, in the last four decades, some very exciting things have happened. For example, captions on television, the closed captions, mm-hmm. and the Decoder Chip Act, which was proposed by our own Senator Harkin. The captions are almost in every program now, although there are some genres that still don't have them or they don't get displayed properly, sometimes because of obsolete caption broadcast equipment at a local provider, such as Mediacom or Cox or Comcast or whatever. But by and large, everything is captioned that needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
The telephone, of course, has converted to a TTY and now to a new phase, the video phone, with relay operators so that a deaf person can call via the video phone and communicate with a hearing person at the other end by calling the operator, and the operator does the voice interpreting. And let me give you a great example. Some of our students have parents who speak Spanish, so our students have known how now to call for a video relay interpreter, video relay service. They call home and speak to their parents with a Spanish interpreter who knows sign language. Which is a real marvel for these young people to communicate with their parents and the English-speaking students as well. The radio, of course, is still not accessible unless there's a transcript. But text messaging has really put deaf students on an even plane with hearing students and deaf adults on an even plane with hearing adults in terms of getting information quickly. We used to have to go to the house to knock on the door to find a friend, and deaf people 40 years ago used to leave their doors open. And now they don't have to do that. They have flashing doorbells and things like that. But even more so, they have text messaging so they can arrange to meet.
All right. So you get a text message as a deaf person and something is flashing and you look at a screen.
That's right. Or it's vibrating in your pocket. Absolutely.
Okay. Wonderful. Anything to add to that, Karen, on the technology front? I'm thinking about how sight-impaired people, blind people, can enjoy predominantly visual media, TV and film. How does that happen?
There are people who will provide description, audio description of a program that's going on. Public television is very good about having audio described materials. I went to a theater production of Carmen recently where they had volunteers doing that. Mm-hmm. So it's basically someone talking in the quiet places of a show, telling you what's going on so that you know. Because media has become so very, very visual as they've improved on all that technology, this has become really more and more helpful in terms of being able to enjoy that sort of thing.
Okay, joining us now, Mark Block is with us. He lives in Ankeny currently. Good afternoon, Mark.
Hello, Ben, and thank you to Rob for his work in setting the stage for today.
Okay. Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard with the series Being Physically Disabled in Iowa this week. Mark, you suffered a spinal cord injury about a quarter century ago, 25 years ago, left you paralyzed from the neck down. Tell us a little bit about the accident that you had that left you paralyzed.
Well, I grew up in Fort Dodge, and I was driving one evening with a friend, and I was actually driving down the river road in Fort Dodge and clocking my run for the next day. I used to run quite a bit and actually hit a bump in the road, was forced off the shoulder of the road. The car nosed into a drainage embankment, flipped two, three times end over end, and hit a tree. And during mid-roll, I was thrown into the windshield and pinned underneath the car. And my friend came to sometime later and walked to a farmhouse, called for help, and the paramedics, the sheriff, and the county coroner came to the car, found me inside, and I was unconscious and was not breathing. And they extracted me from the car and revived me, took me to a local hospital, flew me to Des Moines, Iowa Methodist Medical Center, and en route in the helicopter, I coded. Went into a rest, and they set the helicopter down and revived me again. And then we made the trip to Iowa Methodist, and I went into coma.
Wow! And you came out of coma how long after that?
About a month. Mm-hmm. They did surgery to realign my neck, and a couple weeks after that, I came back progressively, slowly and progressively. And at that time, the doctors told my parents that I would never move.
Mm-hmm. You did, in fact, go through some rehabilitation and were able to move to what degree?
Well, I was at Yonker Rehabilitation, and the accident happened in August. In September, I was strong enough to sit up but needed to be pushed around in a wheelchair. By October, I was strong enough to move to an electric wheelchair. I had the use of my hand but was still paralyzed. And then things came back quickly in November, where I started to walk with a cane. And then in December, just before Christmas, I was released from the hospital. And then over the period of the next few years, I got better and competed in the Drake Lee's Marathon in 1988, 2 years after the accident. Mm-hmm. And then,
in a wheelchair?
No, I was actually walking. I had
a
leg brace and was not using a cane, but came back quite well. And over the period of the next few years, got back to where I was before the accident.
Mm-hmm. And then I understand you a couple of years ago, you were re-injured.
Yeah. 2 years ago, I was working in my driveway loading my van, and I fell, tripped over a box and hit my head on the van, and got another spinal cord injury and a mild traumatic brain injury.
Mm. How's your mobility now, Mark?
It's limited. It's stronger on the right side than on the left.
You're up and walking, though.
I am up and walking, but have a great deal of balance challenges and have problems regulating my blood pressure, my heart rate, and vision. Things like that are impaired due to the level of my injury.
Now, Mark Block, you made some news last month when you climbed to the top of the Willis Tower. People still know it also as the Sears Tower in Chicago. How many stories is that?
That's 103 stories.
103 stories. You climbed up that entire stairwell up to the top. I guess I could ask why, but you probably would quote Sir Edmund Hillary to me, wouldn't you?
Well, you know, it's important to have goals, both short-term and long-term. And when I was over in Chicago at the Rehab Institute of Chicago for my therapy, I made friends with numerous patients, one in particular who was paralyzed from his neck down too, and we made a promise that we would climb the stairs and we would meet at the top this year, and we did.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to go those 100 and some stories?
1 hour and 3 minutes.
1 hour and 3 minutes. That's quick. That's
well,
quick.
You know, it wasn't about time. It was just about completion,
right.
And
Give us a picture, Mark, if you could. It gives us a little bit of a better idea of your disability, what you look like when you climb stairs, and how that's different than how I might climb stairs.
Well, it's very difficult in that I have a great many balance issues, as I mentioned before, but my spasticity is so heightened that I have a lot of jerky, spastic and restrictive movements because much of my left side is constricted because of the spasticity is so tight, and with the physical exertion required, that sets off much of my spasticity, so it makes me yet again very, very jerky, and I'm able to substitute the railing for the cane that I normally walk with.
And so you had a lot of willpower, I understand. Right, the day before you went up, you broke some ribs.
Well, it's ironic that I was in town and I have been training for 6 months to climb, 2,109 steps. But it was the day before I was staying at a friend's house. I got up in the morning right out of bed, which made me quite spastic from laying there all night. I had to use the restroom. Went downstairs, and when I came back up the 20 stairs, I stepped up from the 19th stair, and my spasticity limited me from making the stair. When I leaned backwards, I fell backwards and did a flip over the second floor railing and fell 12 feet to the foyer below, landed on a glass table, and found out later I was in quite a great deal of pain. But when I got back home, went to the doctor and found out I had broken three ribs.
Mm. Mark Block, you're with us along with Gene Prickett, Karen Kenninger, and Brant Larson. It's interesting that, Mark, you say you have to have goals when you have a disability. I want to reach out to our other guests and ask them about that. Karen, for instance, there as director of the Iowa Department for the Blind, is that a key to getting this confidence too? We went back, we talked about that in the first half hour, having goals, setting reachable goals.
Absolutely, absolutely. And a lot of our training is geared toward that very thing, learning that you can do things, setting a goal and meeting it.
Mm-hmm. Gene Prickett, the same for the deaf in Council Bluffs?
Absolutely. And our students so often have had the goals set for them that by the time that they reach high school, we're working with them very closely to establish their own goals for their own achievement, for their outcomes, and helping them find ways to meet them. But increasing their responsibility for goal setting and reaching those goals as well.
Now, the 1992 Americans with Disabilities Act gets much of the credit for improving the lives of those with physical disabilities. It's the federal law that requires facilities to take reasonable, achievable steps to remove barriers for people with disabilities. But I'm wondering what your thoughts are on what are the biggest obstacles that are left to be overcome by our society in regards to the disabled in your areas. Can I throw that to you, perhaps Mark, first of all?
Well, I guess, in the area of misconceptions and stereotypes, I am by nature, I choose every day to be positive and to choose my attitude. And I don't like to be negative, but there are stereotypes and misconceptions. And one is that since I'm not in a wheelchair, that therefore my injuries are not as severe as someone who is in a wheelchair. Well, there are certain things I have to do every day, and if for some reason I have another nasty fall or hit my head again or choose not to do my exercises, I could very easily end up in a wheelchair. And the second stereotype is that people want to treat spinal cord injuries or brain injuries like a broken arm in that you break your arm, you rehabilitate, and you're better. And with central nervous system disorders like multiple sclerosis or myasthenia gravis or ALS, they're not stable. And central nervous system cells don't have the ability to regenerate. They actually oftentimes degenerate. So, you know, due to the redundancy, the plasticity of the brain, you're able to relearn things through rehab, but there's never a magic endpoint where you say, okay, I'm healed. And that's part of the stereotype that through education awareness, we are trying to do our best to educate people.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, Mark, because on this program not too long ago, I interviewed a young man who was born actually with no legs. Mm-hmm. And we got to talking about what is a disability. And he said, actually, I don't even think of myself as disabled. Mm-hmm. The only way that I'm reminded of that is because society, I'm constantly reminded of that. And so that seems to play a large part in all the areas of disability that we're talking about today.
Exactly. And going back to goals, you have to have goals, and it's important to start with small, achievable goals. And secondary to that, you know, exercise and your goals is a sense of accomplishment and sense of well-being. Confidence was talked earlier. Mm-hmm. That, you know, once you get your confidence up and get that sense of accomplishment, it just builds. It's contagious. And you have to choose your goals. They have to be realistic. And oftentimes if you listen to other people, they'll tell you you can't do it. And if you listen to what other people say, you might not even try at all. So it's important to have those goals and move forward.
It's Mark. You and Karen, I understand, have been on RAGBRAI. Karen, was it this past summer that you rode?
Yes, I did the last 2 years.
Right. You are blind. How does that work when you're riding on RAGBRAI?
I ride a tandem bike, and I have a captain who is sighted, so he drives.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I pedal.
How is that enjoyment for you different than a sighted person? Are you, for instance, enjoying the audio landscape that you pass through? Is that the kick you get?
I love the audio landscape. The bird sitting up there on the telephone post cussing at us because we're bothering them. the sound of the wind and the crops and that sort of thing. I also like the close contact with the environment, the going up and down the hills helps to, you know, really get a real view of Iowa and its in that form.
Mm-hmm.
And the people are fun, too.
Brant Larson, as a young man in your 20s, going back to the University of Iowa, are your plans after the course you're taking at the Department of Blind in Des Moines, what goals do you have set for yourself in the near future?
I'm planning on going back to Iowa in the spring and finishing up my degree in linguistics. And then from there, I'm just going to look for employment, try to get a job somewhere.
You've been at the University of Iowa for a number of years. So do you find it easy to get around on campus, relatively easy, or could it be better?
Oh, no, it's not bad. The bus system's pretty good. And Iowa's a little bit different than a lot of college campuses in that it's sort of spread out. But I grew up in Iowa City, so I've known the town really well. And I find traveling pretty simple in Iowa City.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if we can imagine someone, you know, becoming physically disabled. What advice would you give to someone who has a relatively new disability? Perhaps it's developed quickly, they're an adult, or through a sudden accident, and doesn't feel that life has much to offer after the disability pops up. As much as before. Mark, what kind of advice can you give to such? Could you give to such a person?
You know, life does indeed go on after your injury and with your disability. And you have to determine, you know, what's important to you? What are your goals? What are your ideals? It's normal to go through a grieving process. I mean, we are grieving loss of use of a part of our body or our bodies, and it's normal to go through, you know, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and hopefully that acceptance. And that depression may go on, but you need to determine, you know, at some point you have to move on and determine what is it that's important to you and just reassess your goals and determine new ideals and surround yourself with people who are perhaps in the same situation as you. There's a sense of, you know, socialization that is very important to the whole healthy living, and you have to have that meaningful, deep kind of socialization and understanding that you get from perhaps support groups from people with similar injuries.
Okay, very good. Karen, very quickly, we have to go, but I understand you are getting a new dog.
I am. I use a seeing eye dog, have for a long time since I was in high school.
And do you have he or she with you?
He is here. I'm trying to keep him quiet. I've only had him for a day and a half.
Oh, what's his name?
His name is Jimmy.
Jimmy. And Jimmy's coming along. Does he look happy? Is he ready to work for you?
He loves it. Yes, he is. He's fantastic.
Okay. Karen Kenninger, Director of the Iowa Department for the Blind, thank you for joining us. Brant Larson, Gene Prickett, Superintendent for the Iowa School for the Deaf in Council Bluffs, and Mark Block. It's been a wonderful conversation discussing being physically disabled in Iowa. Thank you for all the insights you've given us and our callers as well. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Emily Woodbury. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.
Being in Iowa is funded in part by Bankers Trust and the Principal Financial Group Foundation.